This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When the public hears that a prisoner has been sentenced to serve time in jail, most of us allow ourselves to think the guilty party will indeed do the time. But what happens when the number of prisoners outstrips the capacity of that jail? Well, the state of Michigan has thought of that. In 1982, the County Jail Overcrowding Act authorized sheriffs to declare jail overcrowdings as a state of emergency and gives them the power to remedy the situation. Among other things, a sheriff is supposed to immediately release prisoners who are not a threat to society. 30 years after the Jail Overcrowding Act took effect, we are still dealing with overcrowding emergencies and their implications in our state, and we're asking the same questions. Do you cram in more and more inmates, relieve overcrowding through early release, reduce bonds, and what are the repercussions of all of these approaches? Joining us is an associate clinical professor of law and the director of the Civil Rights Clinic at Michigan State University. Daniel Manville joins us on Stateside. You say in Michigan, overcrowding in jails has been a problem for decades. Why is that?
There's a combination of reasons that are usually always involved in situations like this. To start off with, the legislature has imposed mandatory minimum sentences, and some of it even applies to jail situation. They've also required mandatory jail time for certain misdemeanors, which previously they did not. So those are probably some of the major factors. And the other is whenever the economy gets bad, there is usually an increase in people being locked up in the prison system or in the jails. The Michigan Department of Correction is overcrowded. So normally, soon after somebody is sentenced to the Michigan prison system, that person is transferred up to Department of Correction. And with the present overcrowding, it has slowed down. So they are not getting people as quickly or taking people in as quickly as they used to. So that creates a backlog within the jail system. Another reason is that if somebody is out on parole, they get accused of violating parole or accused of committing a new crime, they're initially locked up in a jail system, and eventually they're supposed to be dealt with by the Michigan Department of Correction Parole Board. The thing is that instead of transferring these individuals soon after being arrested up to the prison system, they will leave them lagging in the jail system for, say, 3 months, 6 months, or even possibly a year.
Can you help us understand, Dan, the consequences of stuffing too many inmates into a space that's just too small? What about the immediate consequences, first for the inmates?
Well, when you have a jail that's built to hold 500, that impacts on the amount of people that can be placed in a cell or having a bed for each person that's there. If the cell that they're placed in only has 8 beds and you have to put 12 people in there, 14 people, these people have to sleep on floors. It becomes very crowded in that area. These people are eating on the floor. There is probably 1 or 2 showers in there, and you're now serving 14 people. There is no privacy. There is no area to exercise. There is no area really to do anything. So if I'm walking from my bed over to use the toilet and I step on an inmate, there's going to be a violent outburst, and it might even turn into, a physical assault. It also becomes very difficult for the guards in regards to supervising the inmates.
Keeping a lid on things.
Right.
And long-term consequences?
Long-term consequences, it's like anything that is built for X amount, then you increase it by X plus, it starts deteriorating. I think it's Muskegon Jail. They report that the bricks are crumbling, that the doors aren't properly closing, and preparing meals for, when the jail was set up to feed 500 people. The kitchen was, set up to create that many meals. And now you're creating 700 meals or more 3 times a day. It impacts on all of that. All of it starts falling apart. The other thing is that where it also impacts is that when you have so many people in there, you can't have programming. If you initially had, say, some type of drug treatment, GED programs, other stuff like this. All this is usually curtailed, if not, you know, taken away totally because they don't have the room for it.
So it becomes warehousing people instead of hopefully helping them to correct.
Right.
So when we look at what's been done when the number of prisoners exceeds the jail capacity, the early release or lowering bonds, or then you talk construction, can you give us a sense of the pros and cons of each of these options?
I've got to say Michigan has the Overcrowding Jail Act, and I've always looked at it as a pro because it kind of takes the pressure off by releasing people. So instead of getting to a boiling point where you have a major assault, a riot, or anything else like this, if you can control that lid, then you're able to keep people calm. So I think that the Overcrowding Act really helps that way. The problem is that trying to get everybody to coordinate it, you know, and agreeing to use it, because at one point Muskegon judge held the Overcrowding Act unconstitutional, even though the Michigan Supreme Court had previously held it constitutional. I mean, he had no authority to override the Michigan Supreme Court.
But then we get into that tension, this tug of war between prisoners' rights and public safety. Is there a way to accommodate both?
Yes, Gabe. I believe there is. And part of it is this Overcrowding Act. The other, I mean, one of the biggest problems, I think, is trying to control what's going on within the jails, and the overcrowding is that most counties have had their funding sources reduced by the legislature significantly. And whenever that money is taken away from them, then they either have to make up for it or they try to do, you know, the same that they did before with fewer resources, and then you create the additional problems. They have to have the funding, and if they have the funding, they can do these, you know, they can do tether. They can put people, you know, release them from jail and have them on tether. They can put them in community service. They can put them in drug rehab programs. There's a lot of alternatives that have existed in the past that are now eliminated because of the funding cuts.
Let's talk about public perception, Dan, because I'm sure, as you know very well, one side of that conversation about overcrowding in jails and conditions for prisoners is the view that members of the public who say, well, they broke the law, they're in the wrong, they're a threat, keep them off the streets, and if the jails are too crowded, well, too bad.
But that's wrong. Okay, that's completely wrong. That what you just said applies to prisons, because you're in prison because you've been convicted. You're in jail and probably 80% of the people in jails are there because they're charged with a crime. They are not convicted yet. And as we know, there's a large percentage of those people that are eventually not convicted. The charges are dropped or something else like that. So they have never been convicted of anything. And I don't think you can treat them or think about them in the same manner as you think of, about those who have been sentenced to be confined.
Is there a way to, apart from the Overcrowding Jail Act, it sounds like you're saying that really the answer to help these county jails cope is the funding, and is that going to happen?
As the economy improves, more money becomes available. The difference is whether you take, you know, increase, you know, revenue the state gets through from taxes or whatever, and you end up spending it, you know, give some of that to jails. It's the same thing with education. They've cut back so much on their funding, and as they get, you know, the state is bringing in more money, okay, you spend more money on education, you spend more money on prisons, and in the long term, you end up spending less money when you have these alternatives, because instead of costing $30,000 a year to confine somebody in a jail, you put them in a drug rehab program, and you only spend like $5,000. So it's, you know, you can do that, but the legislature has to decide whether to give tax breaks to corporations or to provide services to the voters and to the communities out there.
Associate Clinical Professor of Law and Director of the Civil Rights Clinic at Michigan State University, Daniel Manville, thank you so much for speaking with us today on Stateside.
No problem. Thanks a lot.